You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
And, of course, your lovely co-host, Paula Lozon. Paula, how are you tonight?
Doing great, Tom. We've got a light snow mist, 33 degrees here in the greater Boston area. The snow is coming down.
You said a light snow mist?
Oh, yeah, a light snow mist, because it's a mix between snow and rain. It's not quite there.
Oh, boy. Well, I know if I was still living in Manchester, it would be actually snowing. Because, you know, it's amazing. The difference between Boston and just up, you know, the road 40 miles in New Hampshire is a world of difference. Oh, my gosh. That's why I had to move. I like Boston a lot and flying out of there. But I could not take the winters. After three winters, I said, that's it. I'm hanging up my hat on this place. I liked it there a lot, but... Man, it was just, you know how it is. You're shoveling snow all the time. You're salting the sidewalks every single day, on and on. Oh, my gosh. And, hey, you know, I'm preaching the choir. Everybody out there that lives in the Northeast or somewhere cold, well, that's why I moved to South Florida. I'm sitting on my patio broadcasting in 78-degree weather. And I'm very fortunate that I have that ability to live where I want to live as an airline pilot. But I also, you know, made a conscious decision to work out of an airport, a hub for us at American Airlines, Miami, that's big and growing, and it just continues to grow. And so it's a good move for me, but, oh, I love hot weather. Have you ever been to Panama, Paula?
No, I have not.
I didn't think you had. But Panama is
Miami.
Is like Florida. Yeah. Well, Panama is like Miami in the summer, but it's that like that all year long. It's just the same. It's hot and humid all the time. Now, I don't know if I could live there, but I bet I could live in Panama. I like the city and the people very nice, and the weather's hot and humid all the time. But anyway, now I want to bring up a couple things. If you go to the website as well as our Facebook page, website is usaradionetwork.com, and go to our page for the American Hour. We've got Lori's song, a book about Iran and her experiences over there. It's very exposing about the culture, and not so much the culture of the people is my perception, but the culture of that extremist government. And it's well worth the reading. She's trying to republish the book so she can get more books out there. And so we're doing some fundraising here, and you can learn more about the book as well and her website, et cetera. But if you go to our website, usradionetwork.com, or go on Facebook, the American Hour Radio page. And, of course, I tweeted it out today, and I'll do some more. I'll put it on my automated tweeting system over the next week or so to put that out there. But follow us on Twitter at The American Hour. The American Hour, no spaces, anything like this, at The American Hour. And it's a very fascinating book, and we've had her on the show a couple times. If you go back into the archives, you can find the interviews if you want to find out more about the book. But we're making a push to try and raise money to help her out so that she can republish the book and get it out there, because this is an important time, I think, for not only us as Americans, but the world to see what that government is really about. If you think that there are oppressive governments around the world, take a look at the government in Iran. All right, so we've plugged the website and Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Paula, before we get into that, we had a theme last night, and that was essentially how the Obama administration has proposed a budget that doesn't actually cut the debt. It doesn't even cut the deficit. It actually grows the government. And one of the things that we are cutting so that we can help pay for this expansion is veterans benefits. I think it's despicable. But along that theme of growing government, and we got to go after entitlements and or the military, and those are our only two options, we're going to focus on some statements that Timothy the tax cheat Geithner said, as well as our president, about how important government is, and or ignoring the fact that government has grown exponentially in the last 15 years and has just bypassed at lightning speed the military and entitlement programs such as Medicare and Social Security. That's our biggest expense now is the military. I mean the government, the federal government. And when I say the federal government, people might be confused. Well, Tom, the military is in the federal government. Now, if you divide up and take out of the federal government the military, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, what are you left with? You're left with the executive branch. The executive branch and all of the bureaucracies that are in it. And one of those bureaucracies is the Department of Energy. And we talked at length last night about the Department of Energy and what a waste of money it is. Now, Paula, you sent me an email today about a project that the Department of Energy worked on, and it on the surface looks like, hey, they did something right. They did something that was of value. Tell us about that project that the Department of Energy worked on.
Right. It was a 12-story building in Philadelphia with a revolutionary window retrofit system. And it was selected to be part of the U.S. Department of Energy project as a blueprint for turning drafty old buildings with single-pane windows into national models of energy efficiency. After just a few months of testing, it became increasingly clear that the agency's choice was a good one. The building, which was built in 1972, is a 200-square-foot mid-rise that fits the profile of hundreds of 30- to 60-year-old buildings across North America that need to be reglazed for aesthetic, comfort, environmental, and practical reasons. Last year, that particular building was selected to be part of a $1.6 million DOE-funded project with J.E. Berkowitz, Quanta Technologies, and the NAHB Research Center to demonstrate the ability of a low-E retrofit glazing system to significantly improve the energy efficiency of older commercial and residential buildings. Using sophisticated energy modeling software provided by the DOE before the renovation, Berkowitz estimated that the retrofit would reduce annual energy costs at that particular building by $55,000. The first result since the project was completed and show the building outperforming the projection. After researching various window retrofit strategies, the owners of 400 Market Street chose Renovate by Berkowitz, which is a revolutionary on-site window retrofitting system developed by local glass fabricator J.E. Berkowitz LP that converts existing single-pane windows into energy-saving, triple-glazed insulating glass units, also known as IGUs, while preserving a building's exterior. The NAHB Research Center is monitoring indoor conditions and energy consumption. While the utility usage of the entire building is being examined, the main technical analysis is from isolating and monitoring energy use in two pairs of unoccupied offices facing different directions, north and east. Within each pair, one room has been retrofitted with RVB, while its twin will be left with no renovation until the end of the Longyear study.
Uh-huh. Okay, so there we have a complete waste of $1.2 million, and I'll tell you why. Now, there are new technologies that come along. You know, it's double, triple glazing. There's really not much different than double panes, which in an older building you might not be able to do, but so we've got some new technologies. Well, first of all, 50 years ago, you could go to any company, any manufacturer, any installer of double pane windows, and they could give you all the numbers on the savings you would get. So we have some new technologies out there, whether it be double pane, double, triple glazing, et cetera. Well, they already have the numbers. Why would the Department of Energy do a study, a quote study, and then fund a building to be done when we already know what the numbers are? We already know that it works. These companies are in business because it works. So really what they could do is spend a minimal amount of money just simply promoting it, but they actually spent $1.2 million of taxpayer money, and here's why. This is my beef with the Department of Energy. They're doing things like this to try and look like they're doing something, but they're not doing anything. They didn't create this technology. The Department of Energy doesn't create any technology. The Department of Energy doesn't create or invent anything. It can certainly promote, but $1.2 million to promote? Oh, my gosh. That's a complete waste of taxpayer money. But this is what they do. Photosynthesis. That was something I looked at last year. Oh, they spent a million or two on photosynthesis to see how plants use photosynthesis for energy and see how we might be able to harness that. Then I did some research online to find out, you know, okay, where is this really going? We're looking like, I mean, these are scientists saying, yeah, maybe 100 years from now we might be able to harness that in a way that's productive. So the Department of Energy is spending our money on frivolous studies, on frivolous issues, and quite honestly, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this particular company that was chosen is a Obama administration supporter. I mean, look at Cylinder and some of these other companies. I'm all for advancing technology, but I don't want to have to pay for it. If it's worth advancing, the government didn't pay for, as I said last night, Bill Gates and Microsoft. The government didn't pay for Apple and Steve Jobs. These are things that were ready. They were ready for their time, and then they happened. You can't accelerate technology, but the Department of Energy doesn't really care about accelerating technology. They care about growing. So that was the theme last night. It's going to be the theme again tonight about how government grows at our expense. And now it's at the expense of our veterans and our active duty serving military personnel. You want to know more about that? Listen to the show from last night. You can download it right off of the website, link to the archives on the website at usaradionetwork.com. But here is our Secretary of Treasury talking about some of the tough choices we have to make to reduce our debt. And notice, Paula, he doesn't say one word about the size of the executive branch or cutting the executive branch.
Some of you have suggested we should cut deeper and faster with more severe austerity now. But that approach, in our judgment, would damage economic growth, would reverse the gains we've achieved in getting more Americans back to work, and would push more Americans into poverty. You cannot cut your way to economic growth. For the United States today, given the challenges we face, severe austerity now is not a growth strategy. Now, some have suggested also that we try to restore fiscal balance without raising any additional revenue from anyone, or even by cutting taxes further. To do so, though, it's very important to recognize this. To do so, though, would entail deep cuts in benefits for retirees and low-income Americans, cuts to investments in education and innovation that would hurt growth and opportunity, and cuts in defense spending that would damage our national security interests. So we will not support those alternative strategies. Now, I want to just emphasize this again, Mr. Chairman. If you do not support raising this modest amount of revenue through tax reform, then you have to ask yourself, who are you going to ask to bear the burden that would fall on basic benefits for retirees or on our national security capacity if you are not able to find additional revenues?
What a crock of you-know-what, to almost paraphrase our president. First of all, he's rolling out the three biggies that scare everybody: seniors, education, our children, and the military national security. We've said this till I'm blue in the face on the show, and I'm going to say it again tonight. The size of the executive branch of the federal government is $1.3 trillion and growing in Obama's budget. He has increased the size of four departments. He's asking for that in the executive branch, including bumping up the Department of Useless Energy from $25 billion a year to $29 billion a year. Okay, so the executive branch is growing. But what does Timothy the tax cheat Geithner say are only options? If we don't raise taxes, we only have two options: cut benefits to seniors, cut education to our children, and cut the military. Okay, those are three choices. But I like to focus on, you know, Medicare, Social Security, which he's not really even talking about Social Security. They're not willing to discuss Social Security right now. Fine. Medicare and the military. Well, Medicare and the military combined don't add up to as big a cost as the executive branch. Neither of them are as big. They're both less than half the size of the executive branch now. It's just grown out of control. It's like a monster, you know, that is just growing and growing and feeding on us, the taxpayer. So why does the Secretary of the Treasury say we only have two choices, seniors and the military? How about you, dumbass? How about you and your department? What about that? $1.3 trillion of waste. But he doesn't bring it up. So this is the deception and the lies of this administration to try and lead the average American to believe, hey, it's either seniors or the military or both, but or we got to raise taxes. Now, I'm not even going to talk about yes on taxes, no on taxes. What I'm talking about is, so you can agree or disagree with me on whether taxes should go up or down. He won't even consider cutting his own branch of the government because it's too important. It's just too important. So now I've got a clip from the president, and I'm trying to remember if this ties in because okay, it's a different one, but let's play this one.
And that's why today I'm pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office.
Failure, not even coming close. Not even coming close. So government is just too important, Paula, and you and I are going to have to pay the price. Our seniors are going to have to pay the price. Our children are going to have to pay the price. But government will continue to grow and get bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, what I wanted to talk about next is Obama's union speech, and this came out, let's see, today. Speaking to the United Auto Workers in Washington, Obama, champion of the working man, and you know, if you go to the Obama website, says he's the only candidate running for office standing up for the middle class. Remember, if we raise corporate taxes, corporations don't pay taxes. We, the consumer, pay taxes. We, the middle class. So he's not standing up for us at all. He's sticking his hand in our pocket, stealing our money. Okay, speaking to the United Auto Workers, he challenged auto bailout naysayers, and of course Mitt Romney, to come around and admit that standing by American workers was the right thing to do, as bailouts saved the auto industry. That remains to be seen. You have to wonder whether downtrodden citizens appreciate just how close they came to having to roller skate to work. Yeah, right. They're out there talking about you like you're some special interest group. Wait a second. The United Auto Workers Union is a special interest group. Like other unions, the UWA regularly lobbies Congress, funds Democratic candidates across the country with millions, and advocates public policy that undercuts competition and free trade. They are a special interest. He says, yeah, they're talking about you like you're special interest. They're a very well-funded special interest, O'Bumbler, in case you didn't notice. So then he goes on to say, and those who claim that bailouts were just a labor payback are simply peddling a load of you-know-what. Oh, a load of you-know-what. That, now let's see what he said. Those who claim that the bailouts were just a labor payback. Well, let's take a look at the labor payback. And here we go. I got to go back to his that was his energy speech. I didn't pull it up. In any case, what he pressured the secured creditors into doing at Chrysler, for example, was to take 30 cents on the dollar when secured creditors under bankruptcy law and under the Constitution due process, because it's the law under bankruptcy. There was no due process. He pressured them into getting in line behind the union, put the union at the head of the line. He has no authority to do that. Bankruptcy law specifies that secured creditors are at the head of the line. Now, they could have fought it, but they decided not to, and that was his administration's pressure. Now, why would they pressure them to do that? He just said, It wasn't labor payback. Well, then what was it? It was the best thing for the country? No, it was the best thing for the unions. That's why. So he's a liar. When he says it wasn't pressure pay, a payback for the unions, and that's a load of you-know-what, he's full of you-know-what. In fact, he is a giant you-know-what. So that's a lie, an absolute lie to say that. Okay, now let's move on to this is from our friend Lloyd Marcus. He got published in American Thinker for a very short little article on Obama the racist. Now, that's not what the name of the article is. I don't remember what the name of the article was, but it's true. Listen to this, Paula, and tell me what you think, and then we'll see if, let's say I were running for president, and what my ad might be like.
This month, we're announcing the 2012 launch of African Americans for Obama.
African Americans for Obama. What if Mitt Romney launched a website called White People for Romney? Oh, my gosh. That would be the end of his campaign. What if I were running for president? I said, I'm launching a website, Hispanics for Garcia. Tom, you're a racist. Can you believe that? African Americans for Obama. How about just Americans for Obama, you racist piece of you-know-what? To use his own phrase. In fact, I'll use his exact phrase. Obama, you're a racist load of you-know-what. Since he likes using that term, load of you-know-what. I mean, what, Paula, tell me, what do you think? African Americans for Obama.
I'm personally shocked that he would go out that far with something like that. I'm not sure I understand what he's, I mean, I know what he's marketing to, but I don't know why he's got to put his finger on that part to go, well, we're only going to single out the African Americans. So what about everybody else?
Well, you know, he's thinking about everybody else, but he wants a special website just for blacks. Yeah, I said it, blacks. He said African Americans. I don't know. What do they want to be called these days? I have very good friends that are people of color, whatever color, brown, yellow, black, you know, on and on. They like to be called Americans, Mr. Obama. That's what I like to be called, an American,
yeah.
Not an African-American. And notice how he puts the African part first. Is Africa more important than America? And many, many folks that could legitimately be called African-Americans have never been to Africa. So why do we call them African-Americans? Why couldn't we call them Americans of African descent? And there are many black people that their family isn't from Africa, unless you go way, way back, centuries. This is just disgusting, quite honestly, and it's racist. We have a president who is clearly a racist. Anyways, that's my view, but it just I find it very disgusting, very demeaning of the American people. So, okay, I'm going to pull up the exact list from Obama's top 10 constitutional violations, of which the Chrysler bailout was one of them. And I meant to have that up here already, but here we go. Got to love the Internet. Here we go, the Chrysler bailout. Now, TARP was also, I believe, unconstitutional, and Bush used TARP funds to bail to begin the bailing out of the auto industry. That's not what TARP was earmarked for. So, hey, if you want to call and say, yeah, what about Bush? What about Bush? Hey, I agree with you. You're not going to get any disagreement here. Jeez Louise. But the Obama administration bullied Chrysler secured creditors who were entitled to absolute priority into accepting 30 cents on the dollar, while junior creditors, such as labor unions, receive much more. The subversion of creditor rights violates not just bankruptcy law, but the Constitution's due process clause. This is blatant crony capitalism. Government-directed industrial policy to help political insiders, discourages investors, and generally undermines confidence in American rule of law. And that's precisely it. Every time he violates the Constitution, he's violating the rule of law. Now, another nice article that I pulled up, because I pulled it up off of my Twitter feed, and folks, you got to go to the American Hour on Twitter, because I'm always putting stuff out. Let's take a look at his energy speech the other day, you know, last week, I guess, or earlier in the week. This was from February 24th. He said, here we go. Because of the investments we've made, the use of clean, renewable energy in this country has nearly doubled. Paula, let me tell you about something that doubled. When I was at the grocery store, I was standing in line to pay for my groceries, and another person walked up to me. The number of people in the line just doubled. That was two people. Percentages are meaningless. This administration put out, right after it was elected, a study on energy. And I can't remember, this was a couple years ago when I looked at it, because somebody was questioning me about, energy use, et cetera. They were projecting out that biomass, wind, solar, everything that's considered renewable would grow by, some percentage. But I went and researched just what percentage renewables are of our total energy consumption. And it was like something like 0.9%. So using the Obama administration's numbers,
It's a very small percentage.
It's very, very tiny, yeah. So it was like maybe 0.9% of total energy usage in America. By using the Obama numbers to flow it out, so guess what? 2030, that seems way out there in the future. This own administration said by 2030, that number as a total percentage of all energy would reach 1.2% of all of our energy usage. That's his own projection. But now, here's what he's talking about. He says that biomass, wind, solar, and the like climbed 12% between 2008 and 2011. 12% of a minuscule number is meaningless. The 12% number or the doubling or whatever he says is meaningless if it's a very small number. The bottom line is, let's compare it to everything else. Compared to everything else, it's insignificant. I would like it to be more, don't get me wrong, but it's insignificant. And his own projection back in 2009, his own, it was the Department of Energy's projection, was that it would reach a whopping 1.2% of our total energy usage by 2030. So, first of all, he said in his speech that the energy, renewable energy, has doubled. Turns out, not so much. It's only gone up 12% since 2008. Then he said, we need to double down on clean energy. That's never been more promising. More promising? Wow, Solyndra and those other solar companies didn't work out so good now, did they? Renewable energy simply won't play an important role in the country's energy picture anytime soon. One day it will. I agree it will one day, but not anytime soon. Oh, and here's another. U.S. energy production, it may account for 13% by 2035, according to the EIA. Now, that's way up compared to what his own administration put out, 3 years ago? 3 years ago. But now we're talking 2035. Paula, are you willing to go without heat in your house until 2035? When maybe 13 days out of the month you can have heat? So he said there's no short-term silver bullet when it comes to gas prices. Fact. Obama could drive down oil prices right now by simply announcing a more aggressive effort to boost domestic supplies. When President Bush lifted a moratorium in 2008, oil prices plummeted $9 a barrel. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, that's $9 is nothing to, sneeze at. It's not great, but it certainly could go down more. So anyways, there was a speech, and it was in the American Thinker on it came out on the 24th, the five biggest whoppers in Obama's energy speech. I'm just amazed at how this guy can get on TV and give a speech and lie repeatedly and not tell anything even close to the truth. This one thing is like, well, he twisted the truth a little bit. He's not even twisting the truth. It's just plain outright lies. It's disgusting. Disgusting. We've got to get rid of this guy. So before we call it a night, Paula, I'm just going to go into our Twitter feed at the American Hour and just let people know there's some good stuff here. At the top of the list, just did recently Lori's song, A True Story Worth Reading About Iran. There's the link there. From last night, trashing TRICARE and our troops. But union government workers, they don't have to pay more. Notice how he always takes care of the unions, whether it's the auto industry or federal unionized workers or et cetera. The audacity of ambition. Obumbler doesn't want you to be too ambitious. And there's a whole article on why he doesn't want you to be ambitious. And he made a statement the other day about how Americans really aren't that ambitious, and they just want a little piece of that American dream nowadays. They don't want anything more than that. What a joke. Spreading the wealth around gets personal. I think I mentioned that last night, how Obumbler is buying votes. Somebody who is actually in a rest home, he got hit by lightning, so he's not necessarily elderly, but he got hit by lightning. His wife can't. He needs full-time care. And he talks about how some of the workers there are bragging about food stamps, saving them enough money that they could buy a brand-new car and do this and do that. Yeah, spread the wealth. So we're paying for that, Paula. The White House praises journalists in Syria but prosecutes truth seekers in the U.S. They're using the Espionage Act to go after whistleblowers, not people engaged in espionage, but people that are calling out the government for waste. So, Paul, if you don't hear from me again after tonight, you'll know that the Espionage Act is being used against me for blowing the whistle on the Department of Energy. call me a lawyer. let's see. Santorum, when he talks about faith and family, he's a nut. He's a right-wing, you know, religious nut. But if Obama talks about faith and family, that's okay. He's such a family man. It's absolute hypocrisy. And there's a link to that article. There's another great article called Obama Has Already Lost and He Doesn't Even Know It. Great article on why he's already lost the election. He and Dick Morris just said the other night, he's done. There's nothing he can do to turn things around. He is done. It's over. He's out. That's the good news. Good stuff on our Twitter feed. Lots of good articles to link to that you're not going to get in the mainstream media. And, Paula, that's all I've got. Besides taking us home, do you have anything else?
No, that was pretty much it. I mean, it looks like it's getting a little close for Romney and Santorum there, but we'll see what happens in the next couple of days.
Yeah, Super Tuesday is going to be very deciding. And, I love watching the commentators talk about how, well, Santorum's not as well organized as Romney and this and that. And, of course, it's not that he's not organized. It's not that he's not a good executive when it comes to managing campaign. He doesn't have the kind of money that Romney's got. Romney's been running since 2008. And when he lost back then, the nomination, he's been running ever since. I donated his campaign back then. I've been getting mailers in the mail ever since for his PAC, his super PAC, his campaign, and on and on and on. So he's had plenty of time to get ready for this. He's raised a lot of money, and he's got a lot of his own personal money that Rick Santorum doesn't have. So it's not they try and make it sound like Santorum's not as prepared and organized as him. No, it's all about money. I know what it takes to run a campaign. It takes money. Romney's got the most money, and the fact that he had to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to squeak one out in Michigan says a lot about the fact that people just really don't want him. You know, he's got to spend lots of money. He can't run as well on the issues as Santorum. But, you know, the commentators and pundits try to slough that off because they would hate to see Santorum at the nomination. He's too conservative. They don't want a true conservative. But you're right, Paul. It's going to be a tight one. We'll see how it plays out. And then the bottom line is this. I know this for a fact. Conservatives and independents want Obama gone so bad, they're going to vote for anybody on the Republican ticket, literally anybody, just to get rid of him. Because it really can't get worse. I cannot imagine a president being any worse than him, let alone we already know about history. There are no presidents that were worse than him in terms of destroying our country. His term for destroying our country is transformation. He wants to transform our country. That's not what Americans want. And as every week goes on, we find out in various surveys that more and more Americans are now opposed to Obamacare, not only the majority, but it just keeps growing, and not happy about his performance. Even the liberals that want him to be a liberal aren't happy about him because he wants to get reelected. So he can't be quite as liberal as he really wants. But that's a red flag for all Americans out there. Unless you're a liberal, if this guy gets reelected, You're going to see him do a hard, hard turn to the left. Even if you think he's already over there, he's not as far as he could be. He's going to go even harder left because he's got nothing to lose at that point. He's in his last term. So we cannot reelect this guy. Anyway, all right, Paula, I'll turn it over to you to take us home.
Thank you. In honoring the fallen series, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have claimed the lives of more than 450 Americans, bringing the U.S. death toll to more than 6,300 since 2001. Five names I'll be reading from the series this evening is Jamal Hassan Bowers, 41, Mark Andrew Bradley, 25, Francisco J. Briceño Alvarez, Jr., 27, David Lawrence Broder, 34, John William Brown, 33. From the MilitaryTimes.com website, Air Force Tech Sergeant John W. Brown served during Operation Enduring Freedom. He was 33 from Tallahassee, Florida, and he was assigned to the 24th Special Tactics Squadron, Popefield, North Carolina. He lost his life August 6, 2011, in Wardak Province, Afghanistan, of wounds suffered when the CH-47 Chinook helicopter in which he was riding was shot down. The Arkansas Airman was among the dozens of U.S. troops killed when their helicopter was shot down in Afghanistan. And he was a hero who loved sports and loved to laugh. A rescue team of Navy SEALs and other troops who had just helped rescue Army Ranger unit were killed on the 6th of August as well when that helicopter that they were on was hit and crashed about 60 miles southwest of Kabul. He loved playing football and basketball in high school and went to John Brown University on a swimming scholarship. He had wanted to go into the medical field and became a nurse and anesthetist, but decided to join the military after seeing a video of a special tactical unit. I just wanted to say that a big shout out to the soldiers that are serving overseas, specifically the Army. Your families love and miss you dearly, and they want you home real soon.
That's awesome, Paula. All right, thanks for that. Appreciate that. We'll be back next week, and on the 13th, which I believe is Tuesday, is going to be the debut broadcast of Susan Bradford. She's joining us on the USA Radio Network, and she's got a great host. I'm going to be putting it on the website. She has a page of her own, but it hasn't been updated. So if you're interested in that, she wrote the book Lynched, which talks about the Jack Abramoff whole issue and delved heavily into that to expose the government corruption that was going on. But her first guest is going to be, and I don't remember off the top of my head, but we'll, again, put it on the website. It'll be on Facebook and Twitter about her first guest, who was one of the lobbyists that was involved in that. So that should be a great show, and I plan on even calling into that show and talking to her about it. So we'll see how that goes. But in any case, Paul, have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week on Wednesday and Thursday, our usual time now, Wednesday, Thursday. I appreciate everybody listening to us tonight. Stay safe out there. Stay informed. And always listen to our show.
Thanks. You have a great weekend, too.
All right. Good night, Paula.
Bye.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.